And now, the Sandhills' number one morning show. Mornings with the Leader Man. Here on Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. And heard and seen around the world at talk973.com.
The best part of waking up is waking up with us.
Good morning, Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. Welcome back to another day of Mornings with the Leader Man. My name is Brad LaDronca, filling in for Steve the Leader Man this morning. Alongside me, as always, is Moore County's one and only Mr. Stephen Woodward. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Leader Man. Good morning, everybody, on this feisty Friday in the Sandhills.
Weather for us today right here in the Sandhills, it's going to be absolutely beautiful. We've got a high today of 81 degrees, clear skies, a little bit of patchy fog for us out there this morning. Lows this evening, we're going to dip down into the mid-50s. Currently outside, it is 62 degrees with winds coming out of the south-southwest at 5 miles an hour. Absolutely a beautiful day to get out there, get your vote cast. Play some golf, just do anything outside to enjoy this beautiful weather. All right, we're going to get right on into it here because we have got ourselves a jam-packed morning show here. Before we get into introducing our special guest that we have in studio with us, I want to take a quick pause to remind you that early voting is going on today and tomorrow. Tomorrow is your last day to vote early. You can do so here in Moore County at two locations. First one is the Moore County Agricultural Center in beautiful Carthage. Second location is the Aberdeen Recreation Center down U.S. Highway 1. Hours of operation today, 8 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Final day tomorrow, November the 2nd, Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you have not registered to vote yet, you can still do so today and tomorrow. And as always, make sure to bring your photo ID as it is now required.
And you may be asking yourself, well, what am I going to do on Sunday and Monday when there's no voting? Well, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to find people who haven't voted, and you're going to tee them up for Election Day, because we still have one of those. And that's on Tuesday, November 5th, and that's 13 hours of nonstop voting at multiple precinct locations. So if you don't know where your voting site is on Election Day, you've got roughly 4 days to figure it out, and that should be sufficient.
Well, as I alluded to, our special guest this morning is your Congressman, Richard Hudson. Good morning, Richard. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning, Brad. Good morning, Stephen. Great to be with you.
So you've been a very busy man as of late. You spent a better part of your day the other day in Rocky Mount at a Trump rally. I want to play a little clip just to kind of refresh your memory as to what you had said during that, and then we're gonna jump into some questions. Okay,
sounds great.
Now, there's no question in my mind, to save America, we need President Donald Trump back in the White House. But, folks, we also need a Republican majority in the U.S. Congress, because a Republican majority will make Donald Trump's second term even more successful than his first term. Together, Lori Buckout and I will work with President Donald Trump to preserve the Trump tax cuts. Lori Buckout and I will fund the police. Lori Buckout and I will rebuild our military. We will stand up to communist China. And ladies and gentlemen, Lori Buckout and I will work with Donald Trump to finish the wall and secure this southern border.
I think that just kind of hits the nail on the head with everything that we're trying to accomplish here. So right out of the gate, I kind of want to hit you with this. So there's been just mountains of data being thrown out there, from seemingly endless poll information, voter turnout information, which, by the way, report came out today that in North Carolina we've already or gotten close to eclipsing 50% of registered voters have already voted early.
Excellent.
But do you and your colleagues have a clearer picture about how the race between Vice President Harris and former President Donald Trump is going to finish out?
Well, I think it's going to be real close, Brad. Our country is very sharply divided, just like our state. You know, you look at North Carolina, if you get a map of voter, say, the last election, red versus blue by precinct or by county, most of the map's red, but there's these little blue dots in places like Raleigh and Durham and Greensboro and Winston-Salem. So, a lot of Democrat voters in urban areas, a lot of Republicans everywhere else. It kind of balances out to be pretty close to even. So, election's going to be extremely close. That means, one vote per precinct could sway an election. That means your vote, if you're listening to this, matters more than ever. So I would just encourage people to get out early and get your vote in the bank, get it counted.
We've been, of course, laser focused on the race for the White House. I guess that's to be expected. But not to be overlooked is the status of the races for the U.S. House of Representatives. And as the chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, that puts you in the thick of helping to fund these candidates and get them reelected. So with that perspective that you have traveling around the country, and your itinerary for the past week has been pretty mind-boggling, I mean, are we going to hold on to that majority? That's a key question.
Well, Stephen, I'm confident we will hold the House majority, but it is very close. Out of 435 seats in the U.S. House, only 35 were decided by 5% or less last election. So only 35 seats that are really, truly swing seats. And so it's a small battleground. And among those, a group called the Cook Political Report says only about 22 to 25 seats are truly up for grabs. So if you think about that, very small percentage of seats, that means a lot of money concentrated in a very few areas. And that's why, as chairman of our campaign committee, I went out and recruited conservative candidates all across the country in places like Oregon and Maine and California and places that aren't traditionally Republican strongholds. But if you get the right candidates, really quality candidates, you can win anywhere.
Like somebody comes to mind is that young man out in Washington State. Is it Joe Kent?
Joe Kent, incredible American hero. Joe Kent's a Green Beret, served in combat. His wife was served with the CIA, embedded with some of our special forces right here at Fort Bragg, and was killed in Syria fighting terrorists. And so Joe left the military to raise their two young children. He's since remarried, but what an incredible story of service to our country. He's a real patriot, and we've invested a whole lot of money to help him win that seat out in Washington State.
How many House races among the candidates in North Carolina are kind of up for grabs at this point?
There's really only one competitive seat, and that's North Carolina's first district up in the northeastern part of the state. The freshman Democrat incumbent by the name of Don Davis is running for reelection. Davis is one of these guys who talks a good talk, but he votes right in lockstep with the Democrats in Washington. And we've got one of the best candidates in America right here in North Carolina in retired Colonel Lori Buckout, who at one point ran all of cyber warfare for the U.S. Army. She's led troops in combat. She is very impressive. Her husband retired from a special mission unit right here at Fort Bragg, and they started a very successful cybersecurity business, raised their children in Eastern North Carolina. Just Lori is incredibly, incredibly good candidate. She will be an incredibly good member of Congress, and that race is virtually tied. Mm-hmm. It's every poll we've done in the last few months has been within the margin of error. So that's another one, again, where you know one vote per precinct could decide who's going to serve in Congress.
Do you think with the recent redistricting drawn of the maps here in North Carolina that that may affect any of the races or anything? Like, I know you personally, you did have Lee County as one of your counties, and now you've been redrawn into, I believe it's Randolph, Guilford, and Moore County, and Lee County now is separated into a new District 13, which Brad Knott is, running for that seat. And kind of that District 13 doesn't really technically have an incumbent running against it. So, I mean, how does that play into kind of the strategy for the Republicans, you know, not just here, but maybe across the country?
Yeah, well, first of all, having Lee County drawn out of my district is like losing one of your children. I love Lee County. I enjoy visiting there regularly. The people are wonderful. Lee County's got so much going on with economic development, and having it drawn out of my district hurts me personally. But, you know, I have no impact on it. It's done by the state legislature. Right. But what they did, to answer your question more directly, is we had a partisan gerrymander done by a partisan court. And the legislature this time around drew fair and legal maps. The result was they reversed the gerrymandering that had wiped out a few Republican seats. And these new fair and legal maps resulted in a net pickup of 3 Republican seats in North Carolina. If Lori Buckout wins in North Carolina 1, we will net 4 seats pickup right here in North Carolina. My district continues to include Moore County and Cumberland County, Hope County, and Randolph counties, and then most of Chatham County. But then they added all of Alamance and about a third of Guilford County to the 9th district. So some new territory. About half of my district remains in the Raleigh media market. The other half is Greensboro, which is new for me. But we've been spending a lot of time in those new areas getting to know those folks. And I, this is probably the most compact district I've had. And so I look forward to earning the support of all the folks in the district.
Yeah, we've had maps that look like they were drawn by Van Gogh in the past. But right. You were telling us a story before we went on the air about a conversation you had with a gentleman named Donald Trump regarding the your belief that early voting was actually something that could play into the Republican advantage. Can you tell us sort of the genesis of that and how we got to where we are today?
Sure. Well, I have had the fortune of having dinner with President Trump in March of 2023, just last year. And during that dinner, I said, "Mr. President, you know, I'm old-fashioned. I think the Constitution says election day, and so I like waiting until election day to vote. But I've got to get over that. And you've got to start telling your supporters, Mr. President, to vote early. Because the problem is, particularly here in North Carolina, but all across the country, come election day, the Republicans are so far behind that we can't make up the vote loss. And so we've got to get our votes." And I said to him, since he's a businessman, I was trying to think of a way a businessman would understand it. I said, "Mr. President, it's like putting your votes in the bank. We need to bank our votes early so that we know they're there. And that'll let us focus on those people who are less likely to vote, and we could turn them out on election day." And you know, his response was, "Well, I'm just not sure it's as safe to vote early and not vote on election day." I said, "Mr. President, voting in person is safe no matter when you vote." And so that was the beginning of the conversation. Next morning, I told the current RNC chair at the time, Ronna McDaniel, about my conversation. Fast forward 5 weeks or so, she rolled out the Bank Your Vote program. No credit to me for the name, but, you know, that's okay. I mean, Ronald Reagan says a lot can get accomplished when you don't care who gets credit. But the Bank Your Vote program now is something that our senatorial committee and my committee are supporting the RNC, and the Republican Party across the country has really, in my opinion, changed the culture for Republicans that we do need to get out there and vote early and get our votes in the bank.
Well, it was, I believe, October 23rd. was a day that will live in history. It was the day that, for the first time ever, Republicans cast more ballots in early voting than Democrats since the onset of early voting. And in some states, it's been even more dramatic. There was a data point out of Arizona where the Republicans were 150,000 ballots ahead at one point of Democrats. So it is resonating. And to the extent that we're already seeing some glitches in some of these Dominion voting machines, and there's some issues with length of ballots in some of these states that have multiple constitutional amendments, it really does seem like early voting is just logical. And I think I'm glad that we've sort of turned that page a little bit.
Well, the other thing, Steve, is it allows us to save money and direct our resources on turnout to those lower propensity voters. You know, I'm looking for the voter that's definitely going to vote for Donald Trump. They're definitely going to vote Republican down the ticket unless it rains that day, you know, or unless their kid gets sick or something happens. Those are the voters that I want to spend our resources turning out. I don't want to waste my time calling and texting and knocking on doors of someone who's going to vote anyway.
That's right. I mean, as our beloved citizens in Western North Carolina well know, you can wake up one morning to an entirely different world.
That's right.
And so we have to be prepared for that. One thing I wanted to bring up, I was somewhat unearthed an interview that involved Congressman Jamie Raskin a couple of months ago. He's a Democrat from Maryland.
He's a radical big government socialist from Maryland.
He is all of those things and more, and proud of it. He has said in this interview that he will seek to invoke Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to decertify a Trump victory if it happens on the basis that Trump is an insurrectionist and thus disqualified. He says he is prepared to face, quote, civil war conditions to achieve this.
The court is not going to save us. And so that means the only thing that really works is people in motion amending the Constitution. But again, it's necessary, but it's not sufficient, because what can be put into the Constitution can slip away from you very quickly. And the greatest example going on right now before our very eyes is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which they're just disappearing with a magic wand, as if it doesn't exist, even though it could not be clearer what it's stating. And so, you know, they want to kick it to Congress, so it's going to be up to us on January 6, 2025, to tell the rampaging Trump mobs that he's disqualified. And then we need bodyguards for everybody and civil war conditions, all because the nine justices, not all of them, but these justices who have not many cases to look at every year, not that much work to do, a huge staff, great protection, simply do not want to do their job and interpret what the great 14th Amendment means.
Is he a voice in the wilderness on that? I mean, is there any support for that strategy?
Well, I think we should be concerned, because there are a lot of big government radicals in the Congress who think like Jamie does. He's one of the ringleaders. You know, it's just ironic. These kind of radical liberals, you know, they think the Constitution's a living, breathing document, that it's malleable, and they like to, you know, they like to quote it when it serves their purpose. But, you know, if a Republican uses the legal process to object or to voice a grievance, that's an insurrection. But if a liberal does it, then, you know, that's all fine and dandy. But, you know, I think, you know, this is the guy who led the impeachment of Donald Trump in one day. You know, no due process. I mean, I don't care if you're guilty of a crime. You ought to have a due process. And just impeaching someone in one day without having any hearings, going through the due process, giving them a chance to defend themselves, it's a travesty. And so for him to hang his hat on that impeachment to say that Donald Trump's illegitimate, it's a farce. And it's hypocritical, and shame on him.
Congressman, I want to bring us back to something that you said the other day in Rocky Mount. So one of the points that you were talking about was working together to build the wall or restart building the wall. So back on the 23rd of October, Senator J.D. Vance, speaking at one of his rallies, was asked directly what specifically was in that border bill that led it to be voted down. Now, he went into a pretty lengthy answer. I don't want to go into it, but Vice President Harris has been saying all along that Trump has wanted to use the border as a campaigning point and basically told everybody to vote that down. Did you yourself have an opportunity to look at that bill? And if so, you know, what were your thoughts? Why would everybody have voted against it?
Well, this is a great question. And for those of you out there listening, you know, this is one of the big farces of this election. The Democrats, under Biden and Harris opened up our border. President Biden signed 90 plus executive orders that reversed what was a very secure border when he took office, completely opened up the border. And now that the voters are poised to punish them for doing that and what it's the damage it's wreaked on our country, they're trying to hide behind this so-called border bill. But if you look at the fine print, the only good thing in the bill was it would hire more Border Patrol agents. I think that's good. But everything else in the bill, all it was about was how do we process these people that come across faster? How do we get the illegals who come here illegally processed into America faster? It had nothing to do with border security. And it was a terrible bill. And by the way, all the Democrats didn't vote for it. It didn't pass in the Senate, not just because a bunch of Republicans opposed it, but because all the Democrats didn't support it. So it's a bill that never passed. And they're now using it, campaigning against House members. We never got the bill. It never right. came over to the House in the first place. But it was a terrible bill. And they're claiming it's a border bill. It was not a border bill. It was a do amnesty faster bill. And it was terrible legislation. And I hope the American people aren't going to be fooled by it.
Another question that's kind of been on my mind, since the race is kind of so tight, hard to tell who's really going to win. And in anything, not just by the president, but all the way down Senate, House, any of those races. If Kamala Harris does get elected president and the Republicans do either maintain majority in either the House or gain the majority in the Senate, what things can be done on your guys' end to stop her agenda, her $25,000 to first-time homebuyers, her just opening up the coffers and handing out free money? What kind of things can you guys do to kind of help stop that?
Well, if God forbid Kamala Harris becomes president, the only protection the American people would have would be a House majority, because even a Senate Republican majority couldn't stop the president. You got to have 60 votes to do anything. And the House, though, it's winner take all. And so, you know, if Hakeem Jeffries is a speaker, if Donald Trump's president, that means Donald Trump's agenda is dead. He won't get anything done. If Kamala Harris is president and Hakeem Jeffries is speaker, we have a Democrat majority in the House. It's Katie bar the door. It's scary to think. I mean, you look at how quickly they moved in 3.5 to 4 years to destroy this country, to drive up inflation, $11 trillion in spending, open border, crime, fentanyl, wars all over the world because of the weakness that they displayed. It was stunning how quickly things went wrong here. I can't imagine another 4 years without having that check and balance. So a House Republican majority is our last line of defense, and that's why it's so important that we maintain, if not grow, this House majority.
That is unsettling to think about. What I will say is that the credible polls, such as Rasmussen and Atlas Intel, are showing that Trump is leading now in all of seven of the battleground states. And there is even optimism about picking up a once unthinkable gain, like Virginia, for example. Who knows? But I guess the point is that's why we need to keep encouraging our folks to get out and vote, and to vote both sides of the ballot, vote for all the key races, president, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. That would be Dan Bishop, your colleague in Congress.
Fantastic. Dan Bishop will be the best attorney general in America.
Yeah. He's, He's probably the leading piece of garbage on Biden's list, I would think. But and then your race for House, and on down the line. So it's not only important to get out and vote. It's important to get out as an informed voter, understanding the consequences of what happens if we don't carry the House, win the White House, and hopefully regain the Senate. In the short time that we have left, let's talk specifically about the border, because I do think that would be sort of a day one priority for President Trump and for the House and for Congress. It has been a nightmare, and we're seeing it, you know, manifesting itself in our communities in reality, and it breaks my heart the way that the media downplays these individual cases of you know, rape and murder and crime and DUI. How do we undo this thing that is so much a crisis in our time?
Well, it is a crisis, and it was a crisis on purpose. I mean, President Biden signed 90-plus executive orders to open this border. And I believe they did it because they want to increase the census numbers where Democrat states are losing representation. And I think they plan to vote them. And so that's why we're working so hard on voter integrity to try to make sure that only citizens can vote. But the fix is very simple. It's not easy, but it's very simple. You know, and when President Trump was in office, we had a surge at the southern border. Mm-hmm. And the president went to the Border Patrol and said, what do you need to close the border? Mm-hmm. And they gave him a list of items. Top of that list was the Remain in Mexico policy. See, the way it works is, and everybody knows this, once you set foot on American soil, you're good. You're never going to have to leave. They give you a notice to appear at a hearing, an asylum hearing, and turn you loose and give you all kinds of resources, housing, welfare, put your kids in school, and you're good. So Remain in Mexico says you wait in Mexico until your hearing. And we know that over 80% of these hearings are deemed not valid. They don't get the asylum.
Right.
And so folks know if they can't set foot on our soil, they're not going to be successful. They stop coming.
Right.
And that's what happened under President Trump. And so we can secure this border. We will secure this border when President Trump's back in the White House.
Well, I hate to cut us short, but man, we ran through that time pretty quick here. I want to thank you personally, Congressman, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come in, stop, see us. Thank you so much for taking this time. All right, that's going to do it for us. Your weather is up next.
We're tracking a cold front that's going to push through later on today, but it should be a calm start for us here this morning. High temperatures cruise on up into the low 80s here as we head into the first day of November. Could be a slight chance of a shower today and as we get into tonight in the first half of our Saturday, just as that front passes through. We go from the 80s today into the upper 50s tonight and then upper 60s Saturday and Sunday. I'm meteorologist Anthony Baglione in the Weather Center.
Broadcasting from the top of the North Carolina Sandhills, 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM, WEEB, Southern Pines, Pinehurst, Aberdeen.